Bill Carraher is a faculty member in the University of North Dakota's Department of History, and this summer he led a research team in conducting the first study into oil patch man camps.
We had some people who were doing archaeology and who wanted to document the material culture and the architecture of the various types of camps out there. And another group of us did interviews and were interested in collecting an oral history. We wanted to collect data that would become the basis not only for historically documenting what's going on out there, but also form the basis of social policy decisions.
For 5 days, Carraher and his team interviewed residents from dozens of camps. He says they also took many photos from the ground, from the air, and even from a specially prepared kite. He says lots of stories are coming from Western North Dakota about these man camps, and many might be surprised to learn what they're actually like. He says there are basically three types of man camps. Type 1 man camps are the best known camps, owned by large companies, tightly controlled, and managed.
It's interesting that a lot of people who come out and initially stay in one of these camps sort of feel restricted by them, kind of want to get out, actually. We get a similar vibe when you read historically about people who lived in company towns in the early 20th century. You know, they liked having housing, but they really wanted their own housing is what they wanted.
Carraher says type 2 camps are basically RV parks with electricity, water, and sewage hookups. He says residents of these camps were typically transplanted from type 1 camps, who just wanted a place to call their own.
Because it was their own space, they tended to develop them and customize them and really, for lack of a better term, trick them out. I mean, we saw RVs with decks, with mudrooms, with porches, with gardens, with lawns, with fences, with areas for kids to play, for pets, basically creating mini suburbs of temporary housing.
Carraher says type 3 camps typically make up any other way a person can live. He says they are mostly made up of campers and tents behind shelter belts with fewer luxuries.
They maybe had electricity, but they certainly didn't have water or sewage, and everything was ad hoc, right? They were ready to move as soon as they got ousted from their place. A lot of them were camping illegally or on the very margins of legal interpretation of what people are allowed to do.
He says in many ways the camps are representative of North Dakota's small towns and says many of the residents were eager to tell their stories.
And there was a tremendous sense of history. Even the people in Type 3 camps who are barely getting by, they wanted to tell us their stories. Even people who might have reasons to be grumpy. We went to one Type 2 camp that was being shut down. These guys wanted to talk about their lives out there. And there was a tremendous sense of openness. There were some stories that were depressing. There were stories that were uplifting. But people wanted to talk. And there was a general sense that they were part of something that was historic.
Carraher says documenting life in the oil patch did not come without its challenges either.
We faced the same challenges as the oil boom workers. There's no place for us to live. And it actually took us the better part of the summer to make sure we had arrangements so that our team of six could find a place to stay. We were fortunate enough to get hotel rooms in Watford City and get a place in a man camp, actually, in near Ray, North Dakota.
Carraher says the team's findings helped to provide written, photographic, and oral histories of what's taking place during the 21st century Bakken oil boom. With funding from a University of North Dakota's Collaborative Research Grant and the Institute for Energy Studies, Carraher says his team plans to return to the oil patch to collect more findings at a later date. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.